Hi, I'm Holly.
And I am still Danielle, and this is still the spooky hour.
And yeah, we're still here.
We're still here.
It's still Monday. We're still in lockdown. I actually just tweeted earlier, I have no idea what week of lockdown we're on anymore. Because, like, there's been so many different ones announced and everything that, like, I don't know. I tried to Google it, and it went all the way back to, like, December, and I was like, well, fuck me. Like,
it's just never ending. Never
It's ending. Just a nonstop loop.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm tired of it. That's... Our episodes are starting to start the same way every week.
I know, but I got my vaccine.
God, we're so sorry. Oh, yeah, Danielle got her vaccine.
Yeah, and my arm hurt for a day, and that was it, you guys. I didn't, like, morph into something weird.
Her chip is not activated.
No, I scanned myself and everything. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, we try. We put her between, like, you know when you leave a store and you get, like, the security
beep? Yeah. We tried, like, the QR codes on the phone.
Yeah. It didn't work. I was supposed to be vaccinated on Monday, but we had a fucking, what do they call it? Like a possible contact or whatever. Yeah, someone at my boyfriend's work tested positive, and I could no longer get vaccinated because of that. So that's how my week's going. But I got a new appointment. Yay!
Positive.
Going on next Friday instead. Yay!
I think you're the last one to get vaccinated.
I am.
Yeah.
And I think I was the first one to register out of, like, us three. Carl got his because he's a scientist, but, like, of us three, I was the first one to register.
And I'm the last one vaccinated. Yeah.
I'm so mad. It's just, like...
Your life.
I am very grateful, though, that I was able to book so quickly, because I see a lot of my friends in Toronto are not able to book, and it's just, like, it's, like, the Hunger Games trying to get a vaccine right now.
I was, like, they're struggling with, like, the pop-up clinics, too. Like, people are, yeah, like,
it's a mess. It's a mess. I can't believe that Ontario is this disorganized. It's a fucking disaster. But we're very grateful that we are able to get vaccinated. That's it. Exactly. Trying to be positive. Positive spin. Next Friday, yay!
That's all the positive I have.
I know, we're running out. I try really hard, but I'm fucking slowly running out.
I know. I'm gonna go hiking tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's it.
That's good. Danielle needs to get outside. I think that'd be good.
Yeah.
And it can give me lots of pretty pictures and whatnot. That's it. That's pretty much all I've been doing is hiking, because that's all the fuck I can do.
Yeah. I'm just going to take my guitar to the forest and play Wonderwall, thanks to Kevin.
Oh my god, you should just, like, walk through the forest strumming. Oh, that's adorable. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm doing absolutely nothing this weekend. So, I'm on quarantine, technically, so I'm not doing shit. That's it. I'm miserable.
Yeah. That's all we got. Miserable, and I think...
That's all we got.
I guess we have some murder to go into.
We do. Not lots of murder. Just one murder.
Just one.
So today's case is wild. I actually really, really enjoyed researching this one. We're talking about the murder of an unidentified victim who the media dubbed Lavender Doe, and how a group of internet sleuths ended up solving this case.
Holy shit.
So, yeah. I really like this case.
Don't fuck with cats thing?
But, like, a little bit. It's pretty much exactly like Don't Fuck with Cats.
Okay.
It's not as, like, graphic, and it's not, like, a serial killer, but, like, the general story is pretty bang on.
Okay.
So this case takes place in Longview, Texas. In the early hours of October 29th, 2006, two men were walking home when they found what they thought was, like, a hyper-realistic Halloween decoration. They thought that they had seen a mannequin burning in, like, a little wooded area, but when they got closer, they noticed the unmistakable scent of burning human flesh. So I wasn't going to say it, but I'm going to say it. The article I read interviewed these two men that stumbled upon the body, and they described it as burning hot dogs on a campfire, and I was like,
that is
disgusting. I have never heard of it described that way,
and none of us are ever gonna eat hot at all.
I was scarred, so everyone else needed to be scarred. You're welcome.
That's so gross.
What they thought was a mannequin was a young woman who had been murdered and set on fire. Investigators determined that the fire was set less than an hour before the men had discovered her.
Oh my gosh.
So it, like, just happened. She was burned beyond recognition, but investigators estimated her age to be between 17 and 25 years old. She had strawberry blonde hair and what was described as perfect teeth. That was one thing that, like, was repeated in the media a lot. She had perfect teeth, and they were hoping that someone would recognize them because of how, like, outstandingly glorious they were.
Like a dental work or something like that.
So that was the only real big clue they had, was her nice teeth. So that was the one that was everywhere, and I'm mentioning that because it comes up later.
Okay.
I'm not just talking about her teeth because I'm jealous.
She just has good teeth.
Yeah. So she was wearing jeans and a light purple shirt, and this shirt was what got her the nickname Lavender Doe, which was a spin on Jane Doe. They found $40 in her pocket, which led investigators to believe that robbery was not the motive. Little evidence survived the fire, but the investigators did find male DNA, which indicated a sexual assault might have taken place. And that right there is where Lavender Doe's case goes cold. No one identified her. Her DNA did not match any in the system, and there were no missing persons cases that matched her description. Investigators did find a match for the male DNA on the scene. This match was to a man named Joseph Wayne Burnett, who admitted to picking up a woman in the area for sex, but that's it. He said he dropped her off when they were done, and that was the last he saw of her. Since there was no real proof.
Suspicious.
Yeah, you remember him. Since there was no real proof that this sexual encounter was non-consensual, investigators let him go, but they kind of kept their eye on him because his DNA was on the scene.
Yeah, like what?
I was going to say something like else there, but I was like, his DNA is on the scene. That's all you need to know. In December 2006, Lavender's body was buried by the police, and in a really cute little touching tribute, members of the Longview community showed up and gave like a small funeral ceremony. They laid flowers on the grave and would actually tend to the grave and put fresh flowers like every so often. So the community, like, yeah, they became like attached to this unidentified girl, and this ended up snowballing into an online community of internet detectives. Forums of experts and like normies alike began popping up. So like there's everybody from like people like you and me to like actual forensic investigators started going into these forums and talking about this case because they just wanted to find out what happened to her. For some reason, the community just really got attached to her.
See, I've always wanted to like be a part of that because like I think if you put more brilliant minds together, it's just going to be the best thing to happen.
Yeah, especially like when you have a unique set of skills. Like everybody has like a different, that's from a movie. Everybody has like a different skill. Yeah. So like you're really good at interneting. You'd be able to fucking find whatever you need to on the internet. Like
I know everything you about everyone. Let me tell you guys.
Whereas someone else is probably better at like interviewing people or something. You know what I mean? Like, so I love the internet for that.
And reading
not
people.
Many other things, but what's that?
And like people are good at reading other people, so like
yeah. So that's pretty much exactly what happened in this case. All sorts of like experts and people with all sorts of different skill sets kind of came together. So with the community behind them, police kept the investigation alive. They exhumed Lavender's body in 2013 to do a proper 3D facial reconstruction, hoping this improved model would catch the right person's attention. They ran the DNA again, too, but still no luck there. And unfortunately, they were still unable to identify her. Wow. They were still unable to identify her even with the new facial reconstruction. So all went quiet again until July of 2018, when tragedy struck once again. Another body was found in a wooded area in Longview, Texas. This victim, however, was identified as 28-year-old Felicia Pearson, who had been reported missing by her family just 5 days before her body was discovered.
Was it Felicia's discovered in the same way? Or are you getting into that?
No, she wasn't set on fire. She was just found, like, dead.
Okay.
I believe she was strangled, but I didn't include it in this.
Okay.
Because I'm dumb. Felicia's mother told police that the last person her daughter had been seen alive with was none other than Joseph Wayne Burnett.
Huh.
Felicia had actually been living with Joseph at the time. One article alleges that they were a couple, although another said that they were just roommates, so I'm not sure what the relationship was, but they were living together at the time. Joseph just happened to be arrested for an unrelated charge, which was failing to register as a sex offender. And during this questioning, he confessed fairly quickly to the murder of Felicia Pearson. In a not-so-shocking turn, he also confessed to the murder of Lavender Doe. He was charged with both murders and pled guilty in December of 2020. He was sentenced to 3 50-year sentences, one for each victim and one for his sexual offense that he failed to register for. And when he was arrested, investigators released some additional information. So witnesses spotted Lavender. Oh my god, this is so funny. So I kept writing Lavender Brown, who is a character in Harry Potter, instead of Lavender Doe, and I thought I fixed them all, but I definitely have a Lavender Brown here. I can't. Witnesses had spotted Lavender Doe at the local Walmart attempting to sell magazines to people in the parking lot. Wasn't much to go on, but it gets there. So the case was technically solved and all was well, except I left out the most important part so I can explain it in like full detail. So while all of this was going on, the whole arresting of the suspect and all of that, our internet detective squad was hard at work trying to find the identity of Lavender Doe. In 2017, a man named Kevin Lord discovered the case in an online forum. Kevin was a computer programmer, but he was studying to become a private investigator, and he knew of an organization called DNA Doe Project, which was a volunteer organization that used genealogy to identify, like, John and Jane Does. Basically, they use things like ancestry DNA and whatnot to find family related to a Doe. It's actually pretty impressive. I browsed their website, and they have, like, 5 pages of cases that they've solved.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And they're purely, like, volunteer donation-based. Yeah. Like, they're not...
nonprofit.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And I'm fairly... The like, CEO or, like, founder of the company, like, started it because someone in her family went missing or something. It's a really cool story. So anyways, he sent them the story, and in August of 2018, they crowdfunded the $1,400 it cost to run the DNA. They used a database called GEDmatch, and fun true crime fact, this is the same database that was used to find the Golden State Killer. They found third cousins and fourth cousins distantly related to Lavender Doe. Using these records, they found a middle-aged woman living in Texas about 50 kilometers from where Lavender Doe's body was found. They believed she was a first cousin of Lavender. When they went to question her, though, she told them that she wasn't aware of any missing person in her family.
Okay.
So she wasn't sure, like, what they were talking about. They refused to give up, though, and they tracked down more of this woman's family until they discovered a cousin that she had no idea existed. This woman's name was Robin, and she had passed away in 2006 at the age of 50. Little was known about her, but the internet detectives found some news articles showing, like, lots of alcohol-related arrests and stuff like that. She was kind of described as, like a quote, sad life, where she was just kind of, like, addicted to drugs and alcohol and, like, didn't really have a stable life or anything.
Okay.
So Kevin Lord, who is still on the case, discovered that Robin had once lived with a man named Johnny Dodd. It's unclear what their relationship was, but Robin was known to have several ex-husbands, and at one point her name was Robin Wilma Dodd, which led investigators to believe that they may have been married, but there was no real record. So, I don't know. It was a very weird relationship. But Johnny Dodd had a daughter named Dana, whose social security number was no longer active. Kevin put the daughter's name into DelvePoint, which is another database that private investigators use, and it revealed that her social security number was no longer active, but it would appear as though she had fallen off the face of the earth entirely in 2006, which is the same year that Lavender Doe was found dead. Our main man, Kevin, went on a good old-fashioned MySpace creep session and was able to find Johnny's daughter's profile. Kevin was blown away. Dana Dodd had strawberry blonde hair and nearly perfect teeth. Kevin discovered that Dana's father, Johnny, was homeless and also had a list of alcohol-related arrests to his name. So both parents had actually abandoned Dana when she was just an infant. She had been passed around to multiple homes, mostly like friends and family members, before being sent to live in Florida with her half-sister, Amanda Gadd. In an interview with the Longview News Journal, Amanda said that Dana loved being a part of their family and always wanted to spend time with her nephews. In a quote, she said, quote, "We always sat down at the dinner table and she loved that we always asked, how was your day? She looked forward to that and she told me she looked forward to that time as a family." So for many years, Dana lived happily with her new stable family. Amanda had even helped her get counseling to deal with her rough upbringing. But as many of us do, she ended up rebelling in her teens and she started getting herself into trouble. She began using drugs and had several run-ins with the police. In the year 2000, she ran away with a boyfriend. 3 years later, family members started filing missing person reports in Florida, but
so
not
it wouldn't
Texas.
Be in Texas. Yeah.
Yep. While on the run with her shitty boyfriend, Dana had gotten involved with a magazine pyramid scheme type deal, which would eventually take her to Texas. Remember, witnesses spotted Lavender's Doe selling magazines outside of the Walmart. Well, during the trial, Joseph Burnett admitted that's where he had picked Lavender up. He had declined to purchase this magazine and alleges she then tried to sell him lingerie, which he also declined. She then asked if she could hop in his car to have sex for money, which he agreed to. Amanda, who's Dana's sister, has said in interviews that she found this fact the most heartbreaking, that she would like sooner get into a vehicle with a stranger than reach out to help from her sister. In another quote, she said, quote, I think after all the years, she thought she had nobody. I think that's why she didn't reach out to us. So Kevin and the DNA Doe Project collected all of this evidence that they collected and presented it to the authorities, who had then run the last official DNA test. In January 2019, after 13 years, they were finally able to identify Lavender Doe as Dana Lynn Dodd. Dana would have been 20 years old at the time, or 21 years old, sorry, at the time of her death. So Kevin and the DNA Doe Project were featured in an article, which I used a lot for this episode, in a magazine online thing called The Atlantic. They spoke about their side of the case and even met for the first time in person for the writing of the article. If you have the time, it's a really cool read. Like, it's, you see like the internet nerd side of it. But in this article, they spoke about how they felt after solving the case. The volunteers said that they, quote, had a strange mix of emotions, excitement that they'd cracked the case, but also sadness because a family was finding out that one of their members was dead.
Yeah, that's a lot of emotion.
Yeah. And one member named Missy Koski gave a quote to The Atlantic saying, quote, you want to have a party jumping up and down, and then you go, oh, wait, we can't have that kind of attitude. And I love that quote because I feel like this is exactly how at least I feel when I do a podcast episode or like talk about true crime cases in general. It's like, you want to get excited, but then you're like, oh, shit, like, you can't get excited. Yeah. Like, it's a weird, it's a weird mix of emotions.
It's a very sensitive subject.
Yeah, basically what I'm saying is I want to join the DNA Doe Squad.
They sound badass, let me tell you.
They do sound badass. So in September 2019, on what would have been Dana Dodd's 34th birthday, Amanda and the other siblings gathered their families and traveled to Longview, Texas to visit Dana's grave for the first time. They did update the tombstone to say Dana Dodd instead of Lavender Doe, but they did end up choosing to leave Dana rest where she was buried. And I wanted to end with this quote because I thought it was really beautiful. And this one again comes from Dana's half-sister Amanda. Quote, for us to know that somebody took the time out of their day to come and care for her, put flowers on her grave and say, hey, we don't know who you are, but we care for you. That was our definitive decision of why Dana needed to be here. She is part of Longview's family and she is part of so many people in this town and in Texas. And we decided this is where she belongs. We can come here and visit her. We didn't want to take her away from y'all.
That's so cute.
I thought that was really sweet.
That is
so
really sweet.
Case solved, identity solved. I don't want to say happy ending because it's never a happy ending when someone's murdered, but really cool way to solve this case.
It's kind of like awesome that like people can do that. Like people have the ability and the
I wish I had the resources. It's not the time I lack. I think it's the resources. Like, how do you even find these databases, first of all? Like,
you pay for them.
Yeah, literally. But no, I really liked it, this case a lot. And if you have the time, Google The Atlantic's article because it was really, really cool. That's it.
Yeah, I love that. That was a good one. It's also heartbreaking. Yeah. Like, I was actually getting kind of like really upset at the end there. That quote.
Oh, sorry. I thought the quote was nice.
It is. It's just heartbreaking.
It is. It's really sad. But I do like that the community sort of like were there for her. Like they were like, their, for lack of a better term, like her adopted family. Like no one was there to bury her. So they're like, we'll do it. Like we'll give her a proper send off.
But also the fact that his fucking DNA was there and nothing happened from it. And he ended up going and killing somebody else. That's frustrating.
It's very frustrating. But at the same time, like there was no proof that.
No,
like,
I know. But
it's just. It's one of those things where, like, you know he fucking did it, but, like,
how can you
can't
prove
just
it?
Arrest him. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Besides the DNA, like, how do you prove it?
vigilante justice, question mark?
Right. Fair.
Should I get my bat suit? But yeah, that one was fun to research. I like that one.
That was good.
And now we get spooky?
Yeah, I'm actually talking about a haunted hotel this time.
Oh, yay.
Going back to my roots. So we're going to talk about the Crescent Hotel. So it's located in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And apparently it's notably known for being America's most haunted hotel. But I feel like I hear that all the time.
I feel like everybody just wants to be the most haunted.
Yeah.
You know? So they're just like, I'm the most haunted. It's me.
Like, it's like a competition at this point. Like, no, yeah. I have 4 ghosts. Well, I have 6. So
I would love to see, like, a definitive list. I'm sure there's many lists on the internet, but I want, like, a fully researched, like, I've spent a week at each location. Yeah. Like,
I mean, this one is pretty fucking haunted. So
it's top three, at least.
It's definitely up there. But I don't know how you would determine that. Like, I don't know what kind of scale you go based off of. Like,
how much you shit yourself?
Yeah, like how many times you have to, like, fucking pay people to stay at your hotel because they won't stay there anymore. Yeah, who knows. But the Crescent Hotel was built in 1886 by Eureka Springs Improvement Company. So this hotel was basically built, like, at that time for, like, the very wealthy. It opened in the May of 1886, and this place is built on, like, a literal spring. So the area is surrounded by what people call healing water. So just these, like, springs all around this area. And they haven't visited by tourists for, like, centuries. So Powell Clayton, who owned the Eureka Springs Improvement Company, thought it would be a good place to build this hotel there. Just because, like, they would advertise, be like, we have healing springs, come hang out. It's like a hotel and spa. Yeah. Like, it's a great place to go. So it ended up losing a lot of money in, like, the off season, which caused it to actually close down for a short time until 1908, where it opened up as the Crescent Collect and Conservatory for Young Women. In the off season, like the winter season, like, they lost all of their business, so they just went under, unfortunately.
Those springs, man.
Yeah, they freeze up. So it ended up being one of, like, the most exclusive boarding schools in Arkansas. So back then it cost, like, $400 to enroll your child, which is apparently equivalent to $10,000 today. So that's per year.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money.
Like Trafalgar, whatever it is.
Right. It was, like, this boarding school for young women up until 1924. And then it just opened up just as, like, a junior college, which ended up closing down in 1934 to, because, like, the hardships that came with the Great Depression. So the hotel resumed operations in just after 1934, but it only operated in like peak season, so only in the summer months. In 1937, it was then purchased by Norman G. Baker, who was, like, the self-proclaimed doctor, even though he had no license nor school experience. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of those. He bought the building and turned it into Baker's Cancer Curing Hospital.
Oh, my God. And he's not even a doctor.
No, he's not even a doctor.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So now their treatment plan for cancer was complete bogus, as you probably already guessed.
Yeah.
Basically just healthy food, fresh air, and exercise, but also, like, an in-house made elixir, which was made of alcohol and watermelon.
Oh, yeah. That'll do it, yeah, for sure.
Definitely. So as you can imagine, plenty of people died in this so-called treatment center. So just remember that for later. So before Baker even bought the hotel, he was actually run out of Iowa for practicing without a license. And that's why he ended up in Arkansas. So he, like, had...
Oh, my God. So he already fucked up people before?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So he had this, like, cancer-curing place in Iowa, but then got ran out because of no license. So he brought all those people to Arkansas. So,
oh my God. Yeah.
But Baker did end up being in prison for fraud in 1940. He was held in Leavenworth Federal Prison, but he only spent a good solid 4 years. So
that's it.
For literally killing people, 4 years. Yeah. So now the building was left to a friend of Baker who ran it as a hotel, but eventually sold it to a group of businessmen about 6 years after Baker's trial. Now, it went through a lot of, like, owners after being this, like, so-called treatment center. It faced, again, a lot of hardships through the oncoming years. But in 1997, the building was purchased by Marty and Elise Ronick. They had begun plenty of renovations, which almost, like, kind of, like, restored it to, like, its original glory of, like, the 1886 hotel and spa. But like obviously put it up to code. they still own the building today and have called it the 1886 Crescent Hotel and Spa. And because of these two and like their hard work building this place back up and like bringing it back to life, it was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2007. So visitors today.
So it's like a historical building?
Yeah, it's a historic building.
Oh, cool.
But you can like go and stay there. Like it's still a hotel and spa, but it's historic now.
oh, no.
That means they can charge you double. Haha.
Literally, that's it.
So visitors report today hearing noises in the halls and various rooms of the Crescent Hotel. Apparently, Marty and Elise Roenick actually hired two mediums to come in and survey the hotel. So they hired Ken Fugate and Carol Heath. Apparently, Carol had said there was a portal located inside of the hotel.
Oh.
Of course. So Jack Moyer, who's the hotel's general manager, was apparently like very skeptical of the paranormal until working here for about 18 plus years. And an incident that happened involving a gentleman named Keith Scales. So he is the ghost tour manager at the hotel.
Keith was?
Yeah, Keith is. He still okay. is. Yeah, oh, so Jack's okay. the general manager and Keith is a ghost tour manager. And Keith's experience kind of revamped the idea of this portal that this medium had said existed prior. Which wasn't really a very known thing. So it wasn't like some people knew that the mediums came in, but like the mediums came in when they were doing renovations. So it wasn't like, ooh, this place is haunted. Let's bring people in. They just did it just to like see what's going on in there. And so it wasn't really well spoken of. So it's kind of weird that this happened. But apparently during some of the tours that Keith was hosting, guests would start to feel like start to get faint and go completely pale and pass out for a few moments in the same spot every single night.
Oh.
Different tours, different people, but the same spot. Keith then told Jack what was happening and told him it was just outside the hotel's annex entrance, which is where apparently Carol, the medium, had said the portable was. Did I say portable? I meant portal.
I think you said portable.
I think I did too. I was like, what?
It's definitely nap time.
It's nap time, guys. So Jack and Keith also realized that this apparent portal entrance is located right above the morgue that is located on the bottom level of the base, like, or like the basement of the
hotel.
Like,
how creepy can this get? Yeah. Like, how many levels of creepy can we put?
Right. And this morgue is from like the Baker's makeshift cancer hospital. So it's still there today and they kept it. So apparently during construction of the building in the 1880s, one of the workers, who was an Irishman, fell to his death in the area, which is now room 218. And 218 is apparently the most haunted room in the facility.
Of course.
Yeah, obviously. So now people refer to this entity as Michael, and he's been linked to extreme poltergeist activity. So visitors have reported hearing a man almost like scream or cry falling from the ceiling. Like, it's not like a cry like I'm upset. It's like you're falling down like, and you're about to die. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
With that that emotion. So scary. So the door in the room will open and then slam shut. And after it slams shut, you can't open it, apparently. There's also reports of hands coming out of the bathroom mirror in 218.
Oh.
So this is the most requested room in the hotel is 218. So me and Holly are obviously going to stay there in
Absolutely.
This room. Yep. I want to see hands.
Added that one to our bucket list.
Yeah. Can you imagine like being in the washroom and like, oh my God, we were just talking about this. So I don't remember why we brought it up.
Oh, but that posting I sent you.
Yeah.
It was like, what is your... like your witchy power or something based on your zodiac sign, and you got
some
mirror scrying, and it's apparently an ability where you can stare into any reflective surface. So like it's like mirrors or like lakes or something, which I thought was cool because Danielle loves a good like lake trip.
Yeah.
And if you stare at it long enough, you can like, it's not that you see the future, you just kind of like see what you want to see. So like if you want to see the future, you could see the future. But if you want to like talk to like spirits and like say, hey spirits, am I gonna win the lottery, like you could do that also, kind of thing. Like
I'm getting like a Lion King vibe,
literally. Oh my God. Yeah. And mine was astrology.
Of course it was.
I'm a Libra.
Because I'm a Libra.
But no, I thought Danielle's was really cool. So that's cool that that case ended up having something like that.
Yeah, because I was like, I was telling Holly, I was like, if I'm like, I'm never going to be able to wash my face again because I'm going to get too scared that I'm going to look up in the mirror and see something standing there. So I'm like, this is hilarious that we would go there. I wouldn't wash my face. But
if you see Danielle with a big zit, just mind your business.
Yeah, mind your business. I'm not washing my face anymore. It's not happening. But imagine like staying in this room just to like go in the bathroom and like hands come out and you just get like bitch slapped by a ghost.
Yeah, nope. Yeah, I'd be gone.
I'd
fight it.
Like one or the other.
One or the other.
Depends on my mood.
Yeah.
So there's a room in the hotel called also like the Crystal Dining Room, and both visitors and staff have reported seeing entities in Victorian style dresses. According to one employee, one holiday there was like a Christmas tree and like presents and packages underneath this tree located inside the Crystal Dining Room. And when they came in the next morning, when they went in to like open this place, the Christmas tree and the packages were moved across the room.
Oh, creepy.
Yeah. So
at first I thought you meant they were like a ghostly tree with ghostly presents. And I was like, wow, that's you as a ghost. Just like constantly celebrating Christmas. But no, it's just creepy.
No, it's just creepy. I'm going to do that. I'm going to have
When you die, just fucking
bring a Christmas tree with me to the afterlife. Yeah. Yeah. It has to happen.
I'll bury you with one.
Perfect. Thank you.
I'll figure it out.
It'll make it work. But apparently this happens a lot in this room. Stuff will be moved around to like an extreme and employees will find it rearranged the next morning, which would be like hella annoying. Imagine like coming in and like a Christmas tree that's like, if you think of a hotel Christmas tree, they're usually like hella decorated.
Yeah.
You come in and you're like, I have to fucking move this again. Like,
yeah, that'd be so annoying.
Hell no, I'd just leave it. I'd be like, yeah, too bad. People have also seen glimpses of a couple dressed in Victoria style clothing as well. Victorian style clothing. And
in this Posh Spice in her Gucci black dress, yeah. Or whatever it is.
It's actually posh. Like that's who this is. I'm never gonna like think of Victorian style clothing ever the same again. I'm just gonna think of posh.
Just the little black dress.
Yeah. So apparently people see this couple all the time, like basically like smacking face in like corners and stuff, which is like,
oh my god,
good for you. You're still getting on and the afterlife.
That's amazing,
right? But the man of the couple is also known to speak to guests, and he only ever talks about his lovely wife, and then he'll just disappear.
Aww, isn't that cute? Really cute. Yeah. Aww, I like that.
Like it kind of makes up for like the PDA that no one wants to see.
Yeah. Aww.
Yeah. So our good old friend fake Dr. Baker is also known to frequent the hotel lobby. He is seen wandering in a purple shirt and a white linen suit. He sounds obnoxious as fuck even in the afterlife. Yeah. So the morgue I talked about earlier, apparently you can hear someone pushing a gurney in the area. And ooh, it'll be like pushed down the halls as well. So like you'll be just like chilling there and you just hear like a gurney roll by. I would freak out. I could not.
Bring back the cute man ghost that likes his wife.
Yeah, like this is too much. So the laundry room is located right next door to the morgue. And one night, one of the maintenance workers witnessed every single washer and dryer turn on by themselves.
Oh my god.
That'd be annoying.
First of all, the hydro bill.
That's what my instant thought. I'm just like, for anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about, we have like peak hours and the off-peak hours. So
no, wait, don't you want to do after 7? Isn't after 7 the good hour?
Yeah, that's off-peak. You gotta wait until 7.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My dad was very, very, very stringent on that. Like, we had a schedule up on our fridge, like a magnet, that showed like the peak hours. Like, yeah, he was serious.
It has to be. I mean, it's too expensive if you don't, like, let me tell you.
It is. Yeah.
But the laundry room also still holds the walk-in freezer where those bodies were kept and some autopsy tables. So they still have like some of the original autopsy tables. Oh, just hanging out in the basement.
That's creepy.
Yeah. There's also a lady named she's known as Theodora. She likes to hang out in room 419. And she talks to people. She tells them she was a cancer patient of Dr. Baker's.
Oh.
And then she'll just disappear.
That's sad.
And can you imagine, like, even Dr. Baker's, well, I'm not even going to call him a doctor. Dr. Dillhole. But even, like, he's supposed to be there. I'd be so annoyed. Like, I'd fight him in the afterlife.
Yeah, I'd follow him around in the afterlife and be like, look what you did to me.
There are pots.
Haunt his haunting ass.
Right? Like, fuck that. There are pots and pans that get thrown around in the kitchen along with a kid ghost that is seen running through the kitchen as well.
Oh, good.
Always, it's not haunted until
I hate the
kid
ones. Yeah.
People have seen nurses and people in gowns as if like a patient in like a hospital is walking around the halls as well. So the ghost stories of this place are endless. Many visitors and many employees have their own tales and experiences on what happens in this place. The hotel does offer ghost tours, like ghost tour packages with your stay. So as I said before, we're adding it to our list of things we have to do. I can only imagine the lost souls that are like stuck in this place that were victims of this doctor.
That's like, the one that like, yeah, they're, that's exactly it. They're just like lost souls. And I feel like those are the one, like when you have sort of lost souls, like you said, they're the ones that sort of linger the most.
Yeah, exactly.
If that makes sense.
And at one point,
they got
point,
unfinished business.
Exactly. And at like one point it was like, it wasn't that it was like a rumor that he was like treating cancer like incorrectly. It was just like, there was no proof of it almost, just because he was he was a fraud. Like he did everything in his power to make it seem like he's not a bad person. And so,
but he was.
Exactly. So like there was never like hard evidence that this hospital like almost like it existed, but it didn't exist. So like they didn't know what happened with the patients. They didn't know if he was actually treating cancer. Like they didn't know what was going on.
That's so bad.
Yeah, but the hotel owners, so the Roenicks, did an excavation of the grounds, and in one corner they ended up digging up a burial site. And,
oh my god.
And in that burial site there was over 500 bottles of cures.
Oh, they're gonna say bodies.
No.
Oh my god.
I don't know how many bodies they found. I didn't look that up. But they found 500 bottled cures, so that alcohol and watermelon, but also tumors. So bottled tumors from when it was that cancer hospital.
Oh,
and
gnarly.
And so all of that is on the grounds.
Oh, that's gnarly.
Which would bring such bad, like, vibes, man.
Super bad vibes.
Super bad.
Oh.
And in 2017, a 62-year-old man named William Thomas apparently fell to his death from the fourth-floor staircase located in the hotel. It was essentially deemed an accident, but, like, you'd never really know. He was seen at the bar and walked out and, like, fell over the railing at the top of the staircase and died. People said he was, like, with his wife, but security camera showed he was not with his wife.
Yeah.
So, like, who was this person that people saw him with?
One of the ghosties.
Yeah, but
question
his
mark?
Yeah, but his wife was at the hotel, but, like, at the time of him walking out of the bar, people were like, he was with somebody. But the security camera says he
maybe
wasn't
he didn't
with
know
somebody.
He was with somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, creepy.
And so he fell and died, unfortunately. But yeah, that's the Crescent Hotel. And it sounds absolutely
that
scary.
One is hella haunted. That was like, that, there was a lot.
It's
that's a lot.
Definitely. Like, you can go on to, there's, I'll remember the site and I'll post it in the show notes. But, they have, it's like America's Most Haunted or something like that.
Yeah.
But they have like everyone, like they have pictures of like, they caught a picture of somebody like walking down the stairs, like this ghost girl walking down the stairs.
Yeah.
And these are all like visitors' pictures. Like they're all submitted. So there's orbs
cool.
and stuff like that. And then there's people telling like their side of the story and stuff. But this place was featured on like all the ghost shows you can think of. So it's pretty.
And the spooky hour.
Pretty creepy. Yeah. Now it's definitely
I like
hit.
That one.
It hit the top level once you hit the spooky hour. You're good.
That's how you tell if you're the most haunted. You make it to the
spooky
hour.
Yeah.
That was a good one, though. Yay. So much activity. Like, it's, I like that it's multiple spirits. Like, usually places are just, like, one very loud one. But this one's got, like, mad solid proof.
Yeah.
Like,
it's got poltergeist. It's just got some loving husband that loves his wife.
He's my favorite. I hope he's living a great afterlife.
But, like, simmer it down on the PDA. No one wants to see that.
Yeah, no one wants to see that.
No. But can you imagine, like out of all the ghosts you could see, that's what you see? I'd be like, oh, I'm so annoyed.
Just people making out.
Yeah, like, come on.
Yeah.
But if you want to, right? If you want to come, gross. We're so romantic. If you want to come chat with us about these two cases, well, one's not really a case, but these two things that we talked about today.
Come be our friend.
Yeah, come be our friend, or come help us. Like, we'll start our own little society and solve a bunch of investigations.
Yeah,
yeah. We have Instagram. It's a Spooky Hour Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Spooky Hour, and we also have an email. It's the Spooky Hour Podcast 666@gmail.com. I'm seeing how fast I can say this without losing my breath.
Send us your spooky tales. We still want them.
Yes.
Have a wonderful week. this time next week, we can both say that we're at least got our first doses of this vaccine. So that's good.
Unless Holly has another close encounter.
God, I swear to God, I told Danielle, if something else happens and I can't get an appointment, I'm just jumping in front of a bus. Because, like, clearly someone doesn't want me on this planet anymore.
You're taking it as a sign and you're dipping.
Yeah. But yeah, have a great week. Come be our friend and stay spooky.
Stay spooky, friends. Bye.
Bye.